Hey there, oddballs. In the paranormal news, we have penguin poo that's knocked scientists for a loop, Colombia's dildo shortage, and everyone's having such a hard time with that, and a man who emerged from a 75-day retreat to the world of COVID-19. His opening tweet, did I miss anything? In the cryptic corner of the show, we're looking into Congamato. Thunderbirds are swooping into the cryptic corner, and our special guest will help you lose weight with our own very special brand of soul food. If it's odd to you, friend, it's on the odd to Newfoundland.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Welcome to episode 93 of your monthly paranormal variety show. Having you here is better than breakfast in bed or beers in bed. Why? Because you're wonderful, a masterpiece, beautifully made, important to people because you're important to me. Highly favored by your creator or the law of averages and physics working in tandem. You, my friend, are a certified oddball. And on this show, your family and we are one. Oh, July 1st. Well, first and foremost, to all my Canadian friends out there, happy Canada Day. And, you know, I think we're going to be celebrating in America a few days a little bit after that. So, happy 4th of July to you guys as well. Thank you so very much for taking the time to download this podcast from wherever you're listening to it from. Don't be afraid to leave some feedback, drop a like, or even a comment about how you think of the show. You know, good or bad. Hopefully good, though, because, you know, we could certainly use those good comments. I've actually seen a couple come in there not too long ago on the Podbean app, as well as on the iTunes. I've seen that on iTunes app as well. So thanks so much for that. Means the world and keeps me going. You can imagine doing this show for free now for 6 years. That's right. This is the 6th year anniversary this month of this show. And we're still gaining listeners and still gaining subscribers. So just want to throw it out there to you guys. Thank you so very, very much for that. And of course, as usual at this point in the show where I shout out our most recent subscribers on the Podbean app. Thank you, Ellie. Thank you, Climb. Thank you, Ruby. Thank you, Betty. And thank you, Terrence. You guys have unlocked the terrible para joke of the show. So here it comes. What kind of mistakes do most ghosts make? They make boo-boos. I know, it's terrible. But you guys keep subscribing, so I'm going to keep on being terrible. I hope your summers are going well. I hope you're outside, at least as far as you can be. 6 feet away from people, but still having a good time. That's the ticket these days. I know here in Newfoundland, we're just about ready to open to the borders here. And I'm kind of happy, but I'm also mostly scared to death. I'm not going to lie. We're not opening up to the rest of Canada, but we are opening up to the Atlantic provinces. So PEI, New Brunswick. You know, it's good and bad. It's good and bad. It's good because, you know, it gets the old tourism stuff going, but I can't help but feel a bit nervous, man. I'm like low-key kind of not trusting these other provinces to bring this in here. And So we've been like zero cases for the longest old time now. And I just hope that this can continue on. There's been a major spike in paranormal activity all across our province, as well as most Canadian provinces. We're seeing higher levels of things being reported, the MUFON, as well as some other the more purported haunted location places that are actually being scoped out. Canadian Paranormal Society have actually put out a post not too long ago that the average calls they've received now have exceeded a 55% increase in the last 3 weeks. So that's pretty interesting facts here I've actually taken down. And it doesn't surprise me in the least. I mean, people are spending more time in their homes that might be haunted and actually seeing stuff. And then you also have people who are going absolutely batshit crazy because they haven't gotten out in the wall and, you know, in a while, and everything's a ghost. So there you go. Great time to be a ghost hunter. I feel another boom coming, baby. I really, 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 really do. You know, just a couple of quick things I want to throw out there. Please have a safe 4th of July and safe Canada Day, guys. Don't go drinking and driving. Don't do anything stupid. And be sure to spend your time in your bubbles with the people you love, man. That's what it's all about. Pretty soon you're going to see me actually be launching a YouTube station or YouTube channel, as they call it, in the biz. We don't really have an official one for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. I feel like I kind of dropped the ball on it because I've always been a focuser of audio. I do have a Facebook stuff going on there, but I don't really have a whole lot of videos of this. Apparently people want to digest podcasts that way, and I can't stop them from doing it. So why the heck haven't I done this yet? Well, to be honest with you, I want to make sure there's enough content there so that when people do come across the show, they can just keep on listening. So, you know, we're 93 episodes. I think we're pretty good. The last 30 episodes in particular have been very high quality. So just letting you guys know, you can kind of see that probably come out dropping, you know, in the next month or so. I do have to edit those old shows and get them up to snuff. Also, because it's YouTube, I also have to remove all the frickin' music. So, yeah, that kind of sucks. I do own the rights to the theme song of my show, but as you know, I do occasionally play some copyrighted music on here for more than 30 seconds. So, in Canada, we're allowed to do it for a little while, but unfortunately, on YouTube, not going to happen. Google's not having none of that. They take down my video in a heartbeat, so keep an eye out for it as those new edited episodes do come out. And I sure would appreciate your support there. Keep an eye on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Facebook page as well as the Podbean app. I'm sure I'll put a message up there. Before we dig in and get going with the paranormal news, just want to do a big shout out to our current sponsor, Accusonus. Can't say enough good stuff about these guys and gals who make me sound so much better at this than I actually am. They go in there, they take my high quality audio and they make it, well, higher quality audio. They edit out every breath. They make it sound amazing. Oh, who am I kidding? I'm the one doing all the work. But you see, they've made it so I can do these things with the turn of a dial. For instance, this show, let's talk about the Accusonus Voice Leveler. What an amazing piece of equipment. This simple little thing can turn a podcasting interview just into something you don't have to edit as much. And it's so important if you're into podcasting as much as I am. And a lot of my paranormal friends out there are. Let's say you got a guest and they're talking too loud through Skype and you don't really have time to adjust their levels. Next thing you know, you got to record. Boom. You got a very loud speaker and you're more of a quieter one. So what do you got to do? You got to go back and change their voice and Audacity or whatever, you know, editor you guys use. And you got to make them quiet. And that's time consuming, especially if you're getting into hour-long interviews like some of these shows do. So Accusonus is amazing. Imagine just highlighting your work and just going right into that noise leveler, that voice leveler, and with a turn of a knob, it edits it for you. That's right. It does the work for you. I mean, come on. I love these guys. And you think the leveler's cool? Man, just wait till you see the noise removal system. And my personal favorite, the Deverberator, which actually takes the echo out of a room. This is like a must-have for everybody out there who is into this kind of stuff. You gotta do it. Anyhow, check out Accusonus. The link will be down in the show notes. Let's go ahead and let's jump into the paranormal news.
Somewhere between the funnies and the obituaries is... Oh, yes. The paranormal news.
Our first story, well, it kind of stinks. Because scientists say they went absolutely cuckoo to the laughing gas from penguin poo. Yeah, this is a great one. You know, scientists reported getting high on nitrous oxide before in the lab, but this is actually something that's happened in the great outdoors, so to speak, because it's emitted by penguin poo. And it actually made them all pretty ill. The levels of nitrous oxide, more commonly known as laughing gas, given off by the colony's feces was about 100 times higher than a frickin' fertilized field. So, like, I live downwind from a farm, and there's some days I can't go outside without literally turning green. Professor Bo Elbering from the University of Copenhagen said the truly intense amount of nitrous oxide in Zoom was enough to send someone completely over the edge. Cuckoo, if you will. It is truly intense. Not least because nitrous oxide is 300 times more polluting than CO2. Think about that. That's a lethal, man. That's lethal. Yeah, nitrous oxide exhumed by penguin poo comes from the seabird's diet of fish and krill, which themselves eat on phytoplankton in the ocean. When these are excreted, soil bacteria convert the poo into nitrous oxide, which unfortunately is a greenhouse gas. So these little guys, they're cute as hell. They're all huddled up in the cold, freezing cold. And, you know, if you get too close, I'm sorry to say it, but, you know, you might get really sick. You might laugh like it's freaking Joker gas or something. Moving on. This next story is going to be very hard to get out. Sex toy sales have taken off amid Colombia's coronavirus quarantine. And they've taken off all over the world, by the way. Gerson Monet holds up his cell phone to proudly show off his online sex shop. A red banner reading, sold out, is plastered across half the products. While most Colombian businesses suffer during a five-week lockdown meant to curb the spread of the coronavirus, one online industry has seen an explosion in sales. The usually conservative country says sex toys are flying off our virtual shelves and we just can't keep up with it. Sales started going up on day 4 of the quarantine and they've seen a rise in 50%. That's huge. People are at home and have more time on their hands. And let me tell you, that's not all they got in their hands. They're with their partners. Yeah, right. Let's be honest. Or alone. And they fund their daily activities when it comes to being intimate. Reuters spoke to 6 online sex shops in Colombia, and they all said they have seen a swell in sales since the quarantine began. Colombians are meant to remain at home until April 27th, except for outings to buy food and medicine. You know, I can't think of better medicine than those dildos. And visits the banks, among other exceptions. Sex toys could help people keep their spirits up during keep their spirits up. Oh, come on. Who wrote this article? During long isolation? Seriously? Psychologist Dr. Carolina Guzman said it might lead to an easing of sexual mores. Let me tell you something. You think this is bad? You think the dildo shortage is bad? Just wait till the battery shortage follows it. I'm telling you, it's going to be hell over there in Colombia. Okay, let's go to Japan for our next story. Because there's actually been the mysterious UFO that was captured. And that's not the only thing that was captured. This thing's actually captured the imaginations of the Japanese in Tokyo. It's hardly the stuff of little green men, but a mysterious balloon-like object seen floating across the skies of northern Japan has captured national attention, even prompting questions to the government. The unidentified flying object was first spotted on Wednesday morning when residents in northern Sendai City took to social media to post pictures and debate what they were seeing. Things took a turn for the fantastical as people talked about seeing gods, Goku from Dragon Ball Z on his cloud. This white thing isn't moving at all. What is it? Can anyone tell me? Wrote one user. With others chiming in using the hashtag unidentified flying object in Japanese. Authorities said they were baffled by the object, which close-up images taken by local residents and media suggest is composed of a balloon-like object attached to cross sticks with propellers. The object looks like a balloon for monitoring weather, but it's not ours. An official at the Sendai Bureau of the Japan Meteorological Agency told AFP on Thursday. Local police reportedly flew a helicopter to confirm the presence of the object, but also drew a blank on its identity, even after consulting other authorities and organizations. Kyushu University Aeronautics Department publicly denied the device belonged to them after public speculation. So, the mystery builds. Who owns this balloon? Could it be the Wizard of Oz? Could it be Son Goku? Who knows? We've all been involved with different things over our lives, and no matter how passionate you are about something, sometimes you just don't want to go, okay? But what about someone who's getting paid a lot of money to perform, who comes up with a crazy excuse? It's almost to the point where we feel like it might not be one. An ex-soccer player once claimed he was late to practice in Chile because he was abducted by aliens, former teammate says. The former Argentine soccer player, Guillermo Marino, came up with quite the story for why he was late to practice with the Universidad de Chile of the Chilean Premier Division, an ex-teammate recalled. Gustavo Lorenzo told Mexico's Lado B he and Marino were playing for the club from 2011 to 2013, and that Marino one time gave a wild excuse for being late to practice. According to ESPN, he expressed to the outlet that he was going to explain the story because Moreno told him to. He says that he actually arrived late to one training because he was abducted by aliens. He gave us the entire explanation of that, of what he felt, and the rest of it. There are cases where the player says, I left and I came back 2 days later because I was kidnapped by aliens. But Guy is not that kind of player. Guy was a very proper guy. Everyone knows Guy Moreno. Lorenzo continued, he started to explain that he was suddenly lost and abducted by aliens. He explained that they take out your soul, analyze it, and all the while on the journey, they are looking after you. He said something like that. Honestly, I believe in aliens. He gave a great explanation, and we all have to believe in him. I don't know. Other types of channels will have to call him so he can tell it better. But in the end, and here's the case, he tells me he was abducted by aliens. We're going to have to go with that. So there you have it. I mean, I got questions about this, man. I got freaking questions, okay? The first one is, how do you keep playing soccer with an anal probe? Let's be honest. I mean, this must have really, really hurt. And, you know, if it's anything like the one from South Park that Eric Cartman got, my God. Number two, they sucked your soul out? Dude, this is the first I've ever heard of an alien abduction where they suck your soul out. Have you guys ever heard about anything like that before? This doesn't really seem like it's adding up very well. Anyhow, perhaps it's time for us to move on to our next story. My excuse will be I'm abducted by aliens and my butt hurts. Okay, so like one of the things I'm constantly being accused of by the people I love is that I'm completely oblivious to everybody and everything. Okay, I'm a bit of a hermit. I don't really listen that well. Yada, yada, yada. I guess I'm just a guy with a mission for the paranormal. And that's all I think about. So people call me a hermit. Fine, I accept that. But imagine if you were a hermit and you came back out into society and you're coming out to everybody wearing masks, riots in the street for Black Lives Matter. Like, my God, there's a man who did just that. He emerged from a 75-day silent retreat with just a simple tweet. He put it up. Did I miss anything? Oh, man, did you ever? One man won a legion of fans online when he revealed he had been in a solitary retreat for 75 days, only to return in May with a triumphant tweet. Daniel Thornton cut himself off from society in a remote cabin in northwestern Vermont as part of a Buddhist monastic community back in March. Thorson, a podcaster and philosopher, was completely disconnected from this outside world and free from 75 news cycles when he finally logged back onto Twitter as the world was struggling to cope with the coronavirus pandemic. It said, I'm back from 75 days in silence. Did I miss anything? His story went viral as many wondered what would be his biggest questions and reactions to news that occurred while he was meditating, sleeping, walking, and eating alone in a rural space. Many joked that nothing had changed, but others said he missed history on steroids. The 33-year-old staff member of the Monastic Academy has been compared to Rip Van Winkle, the fictional character who falls asleep in the Catskills and wakes up 20 years later to find the United States is no longer ruled by Britain. After 2 days back, Thorson observed, people at the grocery store seem more anxious than I remember. Yeah, no shit. He's been the interest of many, but he doesn't feel that different. Everybody's been on a kind of retreat for the last 2 months, so in a sense, what I did is less exceptional than it normally would have been, he told the NBC5. I felt like I really touched the full spectrum of the human experience during that time. It's unfortunate that I came back, but I've never felt so prepared. Interesting take on things. Do you feel like you're in isolation? Do you feel like it's like a retreat from your everyday stressors and the things that's around you? I can honestly say I kind of feel like that, but like it's my life all the time. I'm always hiding in my basement. We've been over this, guys. We really have. There's your paranormal news for this month. Scientists say they went cuckoo due to laughing gas caused by penguin poo. The great sex toy shortage of Colombia, a mysterious UFO in quotation marks that's captured the imagination of people in Tokyo. An ex-soccer player who once claimed he was late for practice because he was abducted by aliens and had his soul removed. And a man who emerged after a 75-day silent retreat to the coronavirus pandemic. All these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
C is for your claws so sharp to me. R is for reports we seldom see. Why do we ignore creatures of myth and lore? B is even more puzzling monsters we adore. T is for tales passed through the years. I is for icons of all our fears. D is for discovery of strange creatures in every country. It's the cryptid corner now to Newfoundland. Yeah, yeah.
In Indonesia, Africa, Australia, and on both American continents, there's always been sightings of enormous birds. It's part of our culture and our lore. One likes to think about the just signs of most of our great countries. Birds and giant birds are usually part of that. I think of the American bald eagle, and, you know, just as an example here. But in particular, cryptozoologists have intensively investigated the African Kangamato and the North American Thunderbird. Some even equate them with extraterrestrial flying objects. So what the heck is a Kangamato? Well, the name actually means an overwhelmer of boats and is an ancient flying reptile with a wingspan from 4 to 7 feet. It is believed to still inhabit the Jindu swamps in the western part of the Democratic Republic of Congo, or formerly known as Zaire. It is described as having no feathers, but instead a smooth red or black colored skin and long tooth-studded beak. This animal gets its name from the natives whose fishing canoes apparently have been capsized by its attacks. Folktales go so far as to say this creature brings death to anyone who looks upon it. In 1923, British explorer Frank H. Medlin heard reports from native Kwand tribesmen of a swamp demon. In an attempt to identify the creature, Medlin showed the natives images of pterosaurs, often called pterodactyls. Without hesitation, they identified them as Kangamato. A few years later, journalist J. Ward Price and the future King Edward VIII were on an expedition in the then British colony. Near the Jindu swamps, they encountered a native who had a terrible injury on his back that he said an enormous bird with large teeth had inflicted. This man also immediately recognized the animal that had attacked him from pictures of flying reptiles. In 1957, a man en route to the hospital with flesh wounds on his chest claimed that a large bird attacked him in the Bangalore swamps in southern Rhodesia, which is now Zambia. He drew a picture of his attacker, sketching the outline of a flying reptile. There were sightings of the aforementioned areas up to the late 1950s, and one photograph of the Kangamato turned out to be a complete hoax, though, upon further analysis. It is unclear what people were actually seeing when they claimed they had seen Kangamato. Zoologists think it may have been the indigenous shoebill stork, which lives in the swamps. However, there are no known cases of this kind of bird attacking a person. A further theory that attempts to explain it suggests it was an unclassified variety of large bat. Cryptozoologists, however, still believe reports involve a genuine flying reptile falsely believed to be extinct. So are the Kangamato and Thunderbird the same thing, though? The Thunderbird is a mythical North American Indian bird that has quite a lot of similarities to the African Kangamato. The time North America was first settled, there have been sightings of large, unidentified flying creatures. In the northern states, one can actually speak of a veritable wave of sightings. The physical description hardly differs from the Kangamato, but the Thunderbird is powerful and cunning, associated with flight, lightning, and thunder. It is a majestic creature, but can also be very threatening. Cryptozoologists, especially the American researcher Ivan T. Sanderson, are of the opinion that sightings of the Thunderbird are the same surviving species of flying reptile as the Kangamato in Africa. The only flying animal that comes into question is the long-extinct North American pterodactyl, a truly enormous forerunner of the modern-day vulture, which had a wingspan of, get this, 26 feet. Wow, that's huge. When classifying both of these animals, some scientists involved in the study of prehistoric astronaut theories led to go as far as to assume that the Thunderbird's role in Native American mythology can be traced back to prehistoric sightings of unidentified flying objects. The American Indians have always worshipped the Thunderbird as one of their totem animals, and it certainly deserves to be right here on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Cryptid Corner.
And welcome to Dr. Nora's Lair. Power on. Uh-oh. I'll get the broom.
Boy, oh boy, this year is flying by. What a truly incredible time we are living in. We might as well sit back and marvel and enjoy as we go, because we only go this way once. After working almost every day, including weekends, to some level or another, I'm finally taking a few days off next week. I am so excited for this. In addition to work and being an essential worker in the public health system, I'm still chugging away at my PhD program, which means, on top of everything, I've been working on 3 manuscripts during this time. This gal is sleepy. While I've been trying to think of a topic for this month, I was pondering what I've been seeing in my general environment. I've been spending a lot of time with my grandma-in-law, and noticed something that shook me to the core. She is a lefty. And watching her work in the kitchen really got me to thinking about those people. William Hoskins wrote an interesting piece recently for Popular Science, talking about how humans who are left-handed are truly an oddity. Only about 1 in 9 or 1 in 10 of us use that hand. But in his research on primates, he found that in bonobos and chimps, the split is a little more even, about 1 in 3 default to left. For orangutans, 2 in 3 individuals are left-handed. He wrote, studies suggest babies are born with a dominant side. On average, 2-year-olds are only about 64% right-handed. They're more like little chips throwing things around rather than writing things down. No theory has fully explained why we skew in one direction as we grow up, but it's possible that we've simply turned ourselves into a species of righties. It wasn't too long ago that left-handedness was considered sinister or bad. Some of those cultural taboos have definitely subsided, but I think their echoes still influence us, he says. So, we know that culture and familial influences may play a part, but is there something a little bit deeper? Interestingly, in a 2019 BBC article, James Gallagher discusses the first genetic instructions hardwired into human DNA that are linked to being left-handed. These instructions also seem to be heavily involved in the structure and function of the brain, particularly in the parts that involve language. At Oxford University, they say left-handed people may have better verbal skills as a result. But many mysteries remain regarding the connection between brain development and your dominant hand. Studies on twins have already revealed genetics, the DNA inherited from your parents, has some role to play. However, the specifics are only really now being revealed. The Oxford team that were doing their work turned to the UK Biobank. So ultimately, that's a study of about 400,000 people who had their full sequence of their DNA, their genetic code, their DNA recorded. Just over 38,000 of these people were left-handed. And the scientists played a giant game of spot the difference to find the regions of the DNA that actually influence left-handedness. The study, which was published in the journal Brain, found 4 hotspots. It tells us for the first time that handedness does have a genetic component. Professor Gwynnelle Duwatt, one of the researchers, told BBC News. The mutations were in the instructions for the intricate scaffolding that actually organizes the inside of the body's cells, called the cytoskeleton. Similar mutations that change the cytoskeleton in snails have been shown to lead to the mollusks having an anti-clockwise or counterclockwise or lefty shell. For the participants in the UK Biobank project, it showed the cytoskeleton was changing the structure of the white matter in the brain. For the first time in humans, we have been able to establish that these handedness association cytoskeletal differences are actually visible in the brain, says Professor Duod, who herself is left-handed. In the left-handed participants of the study, the two halves of the brain, the left and the right hemispheres, were connected and more coordinated in regions involved in the language skills. The researchers speculate left-handed people may have better verbal skills, although they do not have data from this study to prove it. But being left-handed has often led to having a raw deal, from not being able to find scissors to having occupational injuries. Many cultures, being left-handed is seen as being unlucky or malicious, and that is reflected in the language, says Professor Dominic Furness, a hand surgeon and author of the report. In French, gauche can mean left or clumsy. In English, right also means to be right. What the study shows is that being left-handed is just a consequence of the developmental biology of the brain. It has really nothing to do with luck or maliciousness, says Professor Furness. And it is driven, at least in part, by genetic variants we've discovered. This adds to the understanding of what makes us human. And the best guess is handedness is 25% genetic and 75% down to the environment. And that includes anything that's not genes, like exposures and what people tell you. Yet the study has only found the first 1% of that genetic component. And it's only in the British population. So Gallagher summarizes, much more work is needed to understand the genetic component of handedness in people across the globe. Never mind what the huge environmental effects are, and then piece together how those elements result in people being either left-handed or right-handed. I mean, left-handed people could have it a lot worse. In the snail world, righties and lefties can't have sex, as their genitals are in the wrong place when compared to the other. May you enjoy your summer, and may your genitals not be left-handed.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
Tonight's guest is going to help me with a problem I have, and pretty much everybody has. Okay, look, this whole COVID-19 thing, not only are we terrified, but we're also unable to get out as much and kind of stuck at home and you know, the anxiety. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of fight my anxiety with chips and beer and all kinds of stuff. Oh, man. But thankfully, tonight's guest is going to help us overcome my overeating and yours as well, spiritually. A very interesting take. Tonight's guest is Braca Getz. Braca, how are you doing?
Wonderful. So happy to be here.
Oh, man, I'm going to grab my bag of chips right now and listen in. I'm very excited. I'm very excited to have you on, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you got to say about it all. But first, let's hear a little tiny bit about you. I've heard you've authored quite a few children's books. Is that correct?
That's right.
How many was it? It blew my mind when I seen it. How many children's books have you authored?
Well, so far there are 38 children's books out.
Oh, yeah. My God. Can you imagine?
And they're all spiritual children's books. That's what's amazing. Like, I write about really deep subjects in a very simple way so that children can understand them.
Yeah. It's like the whole concept for chicken soup for the soul, yeah, but like for kids.
That's true.
Yeah. That's really neat. So it's good for you, first and foremost, because, you know, we got to start them young. It's true. My little girl, her name is Faith. So there you go. I'll just leave it at that. Braca, tell me a little tiny bit about your background with spirituality and what kind of led you into this next endeavor.
So I went to Harvard University with honors, and I was heading on a path to become a psychiatrist. I was in medical school. But the thing is, I looked like I was on a really successful path in life. But inside, I wasn't. Inside, I didn't feel successful at all. I felt like I didn't know what the purpose of life was. I didn't know why I was living, and I really wanted to know. I would say, what's the purpose of life? To get up every day, to make money, to eat, to get up the next day to make money, to eat. I mean, what is life all about? What are we living for? So I was on a search for that. I searched into many different religions. I was searching and searching. That was my quest. And after the summer, the first year of medical school, I had a 6-week vacation and to Israel that summer. And I ended up really delving into learning about the Torah in its deepest, most mystical and like a deep form that I never knew about. Like, I was born Jewish, but I didn't know that it was really such a spiritual religion. That was sort of hidden from me. And that's what I started studying. And when I started to do that, the amazing thing that happened is that the different eating disorders that I had went away. And I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Why did my eating problems go away? Because they were getting worse and worse as I was getting more and more miserable in life. Why did they go away? And it wasn't until a few years later when I went back to my parents' home. By then, I had married and I had children. And when I went back, I found my diaries. I found my old diaries and I started reading them. And I saw, and I found old letters I'd written. And I saw the thread that went through my life, and it started to make sense. Why, when I finally like found the spiritual nourishment that I was looking for, would my eating disorders be healed? And that's what I wrote my book about. That's the only book I wrote for adults. It's called Searching for God in the Garbage. And, It's really a compilation of the diaries and the letters and the journals that I found, because I put them together. I put the most important parts together because it's an actual case study. The reader goes through it and goes through the journey with me of developing these disordered eating patterns and then the healing process and seeing what is the main message. The main message of the book, the book is just, it's a really interesting case study to watch that within a person happen. I've never seen that done before. And that was kind of a groundbreaking thing with this book. But my main message, the main message that I want to get out to people is that the reason that people overeat or the reason that we develop any type of addiction has to do with the fact that it's our souls that are starving for spiritual nourishment. And when we give our souls the spiritual nourishment that they are craving desperately, then there's no longer a need for the addiction. The addictions are there to message us. They're messaging us that our souls are starving and hungry for spiritual nourishment. That's my main message. So many diets don't work out for people. Or if they lose weight, then they gain it back again, because it's not a physical problem. It's a spiritual issue. And as soon as we realize that, then it ceases to become a problem, because the addiction is there for that specific purpose, to let us know that we're truly spiritually hungry people, and our essence is our soul. We are souls that are clothed in bodies. So when we provide the nourishment that our souls need, then we can really live joyful lives, the lives we were meant to live.
And I'll admit right now that I'm a big eater. I love to eat. I especially supper time. Like, give me 2 plates or whatever it is. But I can't really say that I'm addicted to food as per se. I'll eat my meals. I don't really eat a whole lot in between. But my thing that I am addicted to 100% and have been for years
is Diet Pepsi. I cannot get enough of this stuff. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, this whole COVID-19, that all the supermarkets and stuff kind of shut down. You got to order your stuff down, everything. Like, I was ready to do some pretty sketchy stuff for Diet Pepsi the other day when I started running low. Like, I'm like thinking to myself, like, I need to go to my neighbor's house and see if I can borrow her for Pepsi. Like, and I realized too that Pepsi has taken the place of drugs and alcohol in my life as well. You know what I mean? Like, I don't drink hardly ever anymore. I don't, you know, smoke marijuana hardly ever. Like, I just don't do that kind of stuff. So Pepsi is like my vice. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not even real Pepsi. It's Diet Pepsi. Right. So, which is terrible for you. They're both terrible for you. But I know the Diet Pepsi won't put my weight on as fast, basically. Right. But anyway, so I'm thinking, you know, is this the lesser of all evils, or am I just trying to make an excuse to keep this addiction? Why is it that I got to have Pepsi over water? I wonder what that is. And I guess that's where you would come in, you know? Right. Is it possible that there's something missing from my own spirituality? I'm a pretty spiritual guy. I listen to a lot of Christian podcasts. I take time to pray and meditate and stuff like that. And right. I think it's important. But, you know, maybe there's something missing in my life spiritually.
Okay, great question. So why do you think... What do you think is the reason that people overeat? What is the reason? Why would you say people overeat?
Well, I feel like for mostly there's a couple different reasons, really. But I think it's to fill a void. Some people, right. Like some people have, for instance, too much time on their hands and nothing to do. So they'll right. grab the bag of chips. Right. Some people are just, they got to have that release of serotonin. Somehow. Right. So they got to have that chocolate bar when they're having a bad day. Or like, how many times have we come home from a hard day at work and then like, you know what? Screw this. I'm just going to pick up McDonald's on the way right. home and treat myself because I'm having right. such a horrible day. You know, I think there's many reasons why people would right. eat junk food. But when it comes to overeating, I think it's a right. bit different. I think overeating is, it got to be part habit.
Well, okay, so this is what I think you were saying, too. The reason that we eat is for pleasure, and food was designed to be pleasurable. It could have been to fulfill our basic physical needs that we ate bland things that all taste the same, and they had no color to them, no smell. I mean, we don't need that. You know, we didn't need it to be delicious and smell good. It could have just satisfied our physical needs, but it was designed to actually be a pleasurable experience. So we get pleasure from eating. And here's the thing. Why do we overeat? Because we want the pleasure to keep lasting. If we're not getting enough pleasure in other areas of our lives, then we overeat. Because we want pleasure to keep lasting. And that's a very normal thing. Because truly, the purpose of life is to experience the greatest pleasure possible. And this we don't hear that often. But that was the amazing thing that I heard that summer from that rabbi that changed my whole life, actually, that summer in Israel. This was something I had never been taught. I'd been searching for the purpose of life. And when I learned that the purpose of life is to experience the greatest pleasure possible, that blew my mind completely. I had never heard anything like that before because it sounds hedonistic. But the truth is the hamburger from McDonald's will give you pleasure for those few minutes that you're eating it, but it won't give you the greatest pleasure possible. It won't last. And that's the reason why people overeat, because they want that simple pleasure to keep lasting when there isn't something else that's going to give them a greater pleasure. So there's something called the pleasure ladder, and the physical pleasures are at the most lowest level of the ladder. And they give us great pleasure. They were designed to give us pleasure, all the things that give us physical pleasure. But there's something even higher than that, and that next level is love, and then the higher level, even above love, is meaning, And above meaning in life is creativity. And the highest level of all of pleasure, the fifth level of pleasure is transcendence. That pleasure lasts forever. So as you see, as we increase, as we go on higher rungs along that pleasure ladder, the pleasure lasts longer and longer. So the secret to overcoming addictions and the secret to having that big bag of chips not be calling your name so loudly anymore is to engage in a greater pleasure than the bag of potato chips can give you in that moment. And that really can last a lifetime. Once we understand this truth, that the soul pleasures fill us up much longer, then we're really heading toward a lifetime of joy. That's really the secret that I want to share with the world. And that's what I'm, you know, really, really devoted to doing now. So that's it. Like, so let's say you're in the midst of eating a bag of potato chips. You come home from work.
And I'm telling you, like, I can already hear the Doritos in the cupboard. You know, Doritos are Mexican. So they're like, hey, Johnny, it's time to hang out together, man. Put us on the couch and eat us up. They're calling to me. What do I do, Bronco? What do I do?
Exactly. They are just calling your name so loudly. So you grab it, you rip it open, you start eating away, and you don't stop. You sit down on the couch, you turn on the TV, and you're just, you know, just finishing up the bag till the last crumbs, you know? And that's how it goes. And afterwards, I mean, you don't feel that great about what you've done. And the pleasure isn't lasting for sure. You feel pretty miserable about it usually. But, you know, it's just, and then it just doesn't have a great effect. But let's say you can, here's the thing, to get in the habit of asking this question, first comes that recognition altogether that when you start, when you feel like overeating, you say, is it my body that's hungry or my soul? That one question, you know what that question does? It switches the neurons that are firing in your brain from the reptilian brain, the back brain where the amygdala is, which is the fright, flight one that just wants you to like run away from all your problems, that is firing off in the amygdala. It switches it to the prefrontal cortex, the front of your brain, which can make the higher level decisions. Right away, that question, is it my body that's hungry or my soul? Just that one question, suddenly you can think of an infinite number of other things to do instead of eating that bag of potato chips up. You can think of reaching out and texting or calling somebody who's feeling lonely. I mean, in the time of COVID-19 right now, there are so many people you could call that would love to hear from you, or you could text them or email them, whatever. Instead of, you know, finishing up the bag of potato chips, you can open up your window, breathe in some fresh air. You can do something creative. You could put on music. You could start stretching. You could put on a YouTube video and do exercise. I mean, you can start counting your blessings. You can realize all the things that you are still grateful that you have in your life right now, that you still have despite all the restrictions on your life from COVID-19, all the things that you can still do and that you're so blessed with in your life, and you don't want to lose those things. I mean, think of all the things that you've just kind of lost right now through COVID-19 that you didn't even, that you took for granted a couple of weeks ago. And now they mean so much to you. If you could just do those simple things again that you're not doing anymore. And so counting your blessings is an amazing thing to do. So but there's really an infinite number of things for each person. What's their outlet for creativity? There's so many things. And as you see, all the things I mentioned are different levels on that ladder of pleasure. So, and they're all like basically higher or different levels than the one you are getting from the bag of potato chips. So it takes you to a different place. And And this is a tool to have throughout life. What I do with my children's books is I try to give very young children, the youngest children possible, tools for living thing that they're going to have for the rest of their lives, like happiness tools, gratitude tools, tools for healthy eating, tools for getting along with people, appreciating people with disabilities, all types of things. So that's really what I love to do. It's what makes my soul shine. And I want to spread this to help other people's souls to shine, like I was blessed with, to be given this gift to learn this and be able to share it with other people. How to make your soul really shine. And these are by nourishing your soul, that's how it shines. So I hope this is helpful.
I can't wait to listen back to all this again when I do this. Like, I'm actually excited to edit this episode because there's just so much wisdom in everything you're saying that but it's condensed form. It's almost like all the junk has gone out of the McDonald's and we're just getting the good stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So let's talk about something that I know you're going to be really happy when I say this. Let's talk about climbing that ladder. Okay, so the first rung are the physical things that bring us pleasure. So basically the food, sex, using the bathroom, stretching, yeah. You know, those basic things. What's the next rung up?
The next rung up is love.
So love.
It involves showing kindness, having patience, generosity, loyalty, all these kind of traits. And the point is, this is really interesting because all of this is empowering. This ladder of pleasure are pleasures that everybody can bring into their life. So in other words, nobody ever has to wait around for love. Let's say a person is feeling lonely and they go, well, I'd love to have love in my life, but I don't have it. Guess what? I mean, right now you can't visit all the people in nursing homes. But there are so many people just sitting there in assisted living residences and nursing homes. There are also in aftercare facilities for children. There are animals in shelters. There are so many lonely beings on this planet that you can bring a ton of love into your life by reaching out to these people or these beings, animals, there's a ton of loneliness in the world. This is why a person never has to wait around for love. A person can bring it into their life. So along this ladder are all things that a person can do themselves. And in other words, a lot of people overeat out of loneliness, but you never have to wait around for love. If you go out and spread love, you will suddenly have a life that's filled with love. And that helps each soul to shine. So that's the second level.
Let's talk about the third level. Let's just go right to the top of the ladder here and how we can apply it in our everyday lives. Because, you know, the Doritos are going to call from the cupboard a little bit later. And yes. Now I think that maybe if I did a good deed, like drop a text to someone I haven't talked to in a long time, might be enough just to shake me out of that craving. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And not only that, this is the amazing thing. You don't even have to do it. Just thinking about doing it, suddenly the bag of potato chips loses its call. It's an amazing thing. I've noticed that you don't even have to do the action, but just getting it into your head that you could do that, suddenly you're not that interested in the bag of potato chips anymore. It's amazing. So the next level is meaning, bringing more meaning into your life. It could involve anything, donating blood, doing something for the community, something for the environment. Anything that is, you know, helpful, that gives your life meaning. Again, this is going to be unique for each individual. What makes your particular soul shine? What gives meaning to your life? So that's the third level. And the fourth level is bringing creativity into your life. Now, part of that involves family and children, too. I mean, having children is one of the most creative things you could do. And education, sharing your values, your idealism in all types of creative ways. It's again, this has infinite possibilities of creative things that you could do instead of finishing up that chocolate cake. You know, what people like, it's not people that are drawn to the chocolate cake. They rarely just eat one piece. They just keep going right through it. You know, they eat one piece and then another piece. I'll just have one more piece.
There's chocolate cake upstairs in my fridge right now, and you're killing me, but keep going.
That's how it goes. Believe me, I've been there. I know exactly what it's like. You'll just say, I'm just going to like smooth this slice a little bit over here, you know, and then it just suddenly the whole thing is gone. Really, it just goes like that. And usually when no one's around, no one's watching you, that's how it happens. But so like instead of that, wow, you just get it in your head. I could do something creative right now. I could write a song about eating chocolate cake, you know, instead of eating the chocolate cake. And I could help other people that way. Wow, you're climbing up the ladder that way in so many ways. And then you're feeling terrific. It's then you get to the top of the ladder is transcendence. This involves whatever spiritual enrichment really thrills you in life and brings you the greatest joy. It for like a Jewish person, it could be delving into the depths of Torah, and a Christian person may love learning the depths of reading the Bible and just talking to God and having a real spiritual experience. It could be out in nature and really communing with nature in like the deepest way. This and what this coincides with, and this is something that I think I feel this awesome joy of connecting to the source of all our energy. I think I feel that almost throughout my day now. It's very rare when I'm not feeling that connection. And that really brings me joy throughout the days of my life, which is exactly what I was looking for. So, and this is so amazing too, is that these five levels, they correspond to the five levels of the soul. And this is, again, something that I learned by studying Judaism, that the soul has five levels to it. And these five levels of pleasure correspond to the deeper levels of the soul. And the most basic level of the soul is called the nefesh, the life force. So that it's designed to experience pleasure from physical pleasures, from the five senses. And that's where we were given the five senses. The five senses connect into that most basic, lowest level of the soul. And in fact, one of my children's books is called The Invisible Book because, yeah, it's about all, you know, people say, how can you believe in God? God is invisible. Or how can you believe that you have a soul? Because your soul is invisible. And so I talk with children about all the things that we believe in that are invisible, that we accept. And we don't have any problem believing in gravity. We don't see gravity. We don't see time. We believe in time. We believe in feelings. And yet we've never seen feelings. We believe in our thoughts. And we've never seen our thoughts. We believe in electricity. We believe in electromagnetism with magnets and how magnets attract. And yet we've never seen these things. Well, that's the same thing with our soul. And wind. Wind, which relates to our souls, is the spirit of our souls. We are beings that, again, our essence is, we are, in essence, we are spiritual beings, and we're here on this earth to have a physical experience and to see that there is a spiritual spark in everything physical and raise it up. That's really what we're here in this world to do. So this COVID-19 thing is really to raise us up. I mean, there's a purpose to this. We don't know exactly what its purpose is. But if it's happening now, it's to make us into greater people, all those that survive it and those that don't, you know, where God willing, we're going to see them again. You know, we do believe in reincarnation, and we do believe that if you haven't completed your mission here on Earth, you'll be back again, and we'll all be back again to, you know, to have the ultimate spiritual experience together. So that's the purpose of what we're here for, to have everlasting pleasure and to get to the highest spiritual place that we could all be at.
Guys, listen to this lady. She's telling you that you can, you know, ditch the Weight Watchers, forget about intermittent fasting. Let's just replace our overeating with, well, climbing that ladder. Her name is Braca Getz. She's the author of 38 children's books. Guys, overcome eating spiritually. It's been a wonderful interview. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd and Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd and Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd and Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.